Why do we come to church? To be comfortable, to see friends, to refill the cup of hope, to meet the mystery, the surprise, the loss we struggle to live with, the fresh perspective, the possibility. We come to church for a thousand reasons. And I invite you to be here to find connection, to meet the world that is just a little bigger than what you can comprehend. Which means sometimes being a little uncomfortable. It also means not being alone. How much of your week, your days, your hours do you feel alone? Unconnected. Reconnecting can be wonderful and it can be uncomfortable, like stretching a tight muscle. So welcome. Welcome to the connections here. Come into the mystery. Come to stretch. Come into the joy. Come together. Deb Merrick will light our chalice this morning, and I invite you to speak the words of our covenant church. Deb Merrick.
Love is the doctrine of the church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and its service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve humanity in fellowship, to respect and nurturing power within all of us, and thus we become.
If any children would like to come up and see this book while I read it, it's got some great illustrations. This is called "Who Are You?" Okay, let's bring it back up so you guys can all see. Okay, is it okay? You can read. This is a story about you. The important thing to remember is that you are the one who knows you best. When babies are born, people ask, is it a boy or a girl? Babies can't talk, so grown-ups make a guess by looking at their bodies. This is the sex assigned to you at birth, male or female. Sometimes people get this confused with gender. But gender is much more than the body you were born with. As babies grow into kids, they start to know what they like and don't like. This is your personal expression. What you like, how you dress, how you act. There are so many ways to express yourself. What you like can change as you grow up, or even from day to day. They're doing all kinds of different activities, aren't they? What do you like? Do you guys see some things in there that you like? If you were gonna pick some things? There's a picture of all kinds of things. Blocks and animals and paints and balls. Oh, and here's some more things to look at to see if you like. Costumes and shirts and dresses and boots, purses and bags and hats. You see some things in there that you like? Kids know a lot about themselves, don't they? They know who they are by how they feel inside. This is your identity, who you feel like inside. Who you know yourself to be. This can also change as you grow up, or change from day to day. Your gender is just one part of your identity. What makes you, you? Some people say there are only two genders, but there are really many genders. Well, listen for a second. They're writing some things on the board here. I am, they've written girl, boy, both, neither. Someone wrote just me. You are who you say you are because you know you best. For some people, the grown-ups guessed right about their body and their gender. This is called cisgender, when someone's identity matches their sex assigned at birth. And for some people, there are more than just two choices. These are just a few words people use. Let's see if you can just, if you've ever heard any of these, if you've heard any of these words before, yeah. Trans, genderqueer, non-binary, gender fluid. Has anyone heard any of these words before?
No.
Transgender, gender neutral, agender, bigender, third gender, two-spirit. And there are even more words people are using to describe their experience. This is called the gender spectrum. Have you heard of that before? Gender spectrum. There are lots of ways to be a boy, and there are lots of ways to be a girl. There are lots of ways to be a kid. Can anyone read this for me? Or do you want to say it together? Be who you are. That's it. The end. Do you guys want to help? We're going to go do an art project, actually. All the children and youth, everyone, we are going to go do an art project. I'll let Kendra sing us out.
Just under 3 years ago, I met Lisa. My world tumbled end over end, and my heart clicked into place. I felt a love. That part on its own is life-altering. But also I was exposed for the first time to words and concepts I had never considered. Some never even heard. Cisgender, gender binary, gender queer. I was exposed to the difference between biological sex and gender identity and sexual orientation. I fumbled my way through conversations. Actually, that's not quite right. Lisa and I talked and talked just like any couple newly discovering who they are together and figuring out all about themselves. The fumbly part came when our talk turned to LGBTQ issues. I was an utter newbie, only glancingly familiar with the politics, the history, the language, and she was this gender goddess. There was so much I didn't know. Not far into our relationship, I was at a dinner without Lisa, and someone was telling a story. It was funny and relatable. The teller was good. She was painting a picture of walking into a really out there church, doing the whole hippie vibe, gotta love diversity thing really well. Macrame wall hangings, rainbow flags, and this transvestite playing the piano. There was a moment of stunned silence. Or maybe the stunned silence was just in my head. I'm not sure. But there was that word, transvestite, an old word, a word I had recently come to understand was pejorative. And I realized I was in one of those moments Kendra talks about, the Thanksgiving dinner moment. When somebody says something tinged or demeaning or biased, not necessarily intending it to be any of those things, but still. And I struggled to remember, what was Kendra's phrase? What did she say? How do we speak up for love and respect and dignity without upsetting the person or totally derailing the dinner? I'm not sure I got it right. It felt awkward to me. I stammered out something about that being an older term, out of favor, that the preferred word was cross-dresser for a man who wears dresses, or trans woman for a woman born with a male body. And the dinner went on. But the exchange stuck with me. It bothered me. Not because of the word that was used, that wasn't that big a deal, but because I realized that I had told a story with virtually the same punchline a few short months before. It happened on a trip to Costa Rica. I had come to the realization after a long marriage and the death of my husband that I was attracted to women. So I signed up for a trip with a group of LGBTQ scuba divers. 80 people I didn't know. I didn't know how to scuba dive either. It was this giant step into a world I had decided to explore, and the first few days were really hard. There were men in dresses and women with 5 o'clock shadows. There were butch women and femme women and men flirting with men. Everyone seemed so other. I retreated to my room and wrote long, funny emails to friends trying to sort out my experience, painting the picture with my words. I made my tripmates into caricatures, effectively dismissing their humanity with words meant to entertain. It's only in retrospect I realized that's what I was doing. I'm grateful that the scuba trip extended beyond those first few days, that it was long enough for me to sit, or hike, or swim, or snorkel with virtually everyone there. I got to know them as people. Some were funny, some were dull, some were full of themselves, some were humble. What they were wearing didn't matter. How they cut their hair didn't matter. Whether they liked dresses or pants or some combination of the two, none of that mattered. Not a single person there was a punchline.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Gender goddess. My goodness, that is so sweet and flattering and grand. I am no kind of deity. Just another regular human. Instead of claiming divine status, I would say that gender is something I have worked consciously on more than most people. I have had to name and claim and fight for the right to enact my gender in the world. And it is from that work that I draw in contributing to this service today. There is an amazing revolution in thinking about gender going on in our world today, which can be boiled down to two essential concepts. Number one, regardless of the bodies they inhabit, people really are the genders that they say they are. And number two, gender is not a binary. I don't think it's even a spectrum. I think it's a huge open space in which many intensities of being gendered at all are possible, and in which humans can claim different gender identities over time, and in which many variations of both and neither are also possible. And here arises a powerful and sometimes destructive tension, because although gender is so much more than a binary, the idea that gender is a binary is built into every aspect of our culture and society, down to the most fundamental level. At its worst, this tension leads to prejudice, hurtful stereotypes, hate crimes. But even among lovely, warm-hearted, well-meaning humans, this tension can create challenge, because we are all drenched in the omnipresent notion of the gender binary. It's everywhere, all the time. Here's a key example of how this is so. It seems clear in my experience, paying attention to such things, that we are all hardwired to gender each other in the first couple of seconds when we first meet. We take in a first impression, and we make a call. This is a woman I'm talking to, or this is a man. And then we put the new person into one of two cubbyholes in our minds, the woman cubbyhole or the man cubbyhole. In the church setting, it's easy to say, we accept you exactly as you are. But what if, even as you are expressing this sentiment, your brain is doing an automatic thing that could be at odds with your words? Not meaning harm by it, of course, but still making an unconscious, instinctive assumption, perhaps incorrectly. When gender variant folks join or come out in a congregation, it represents an opportunity for that congregation to explore a deeper level of acceptance, a level that means dismantling, or at least examining and coming to understand some things about how our minds work around gender. And that can be a squidgy business, because this gender stuff is uncomfortable for many folks on many levels. Believe me, I know. Being trans does not make you immune from squirm, and I had to go through my own version of getting used to new ideas that made me uncomfortable, even while I turned to them to save my life. But it is valuable work to turn toward the squirm and try to push through to that deeper level.
Likes to get things right. Growing up, I got straight A's in school. Not because I was some brilliant kid, but because I was good at figuring out what teachers wanted and delivering it. That kind of learning, learning for the A, learning for content rather than meaning, that kind of comes easily to me. Unfortunately, it remains my default, which is why content learning was what I applied when I found myself suddenly under the LGBTQ umbrella. Now, to be sure, I was the one who had stepped under that umbrella, but still, I didn't know a whole lot about it. So I read books and memorized terms. I beseeched my gay friends to teach me the secret handshake. as if gay people were different, and I had to figure out how so I could do it right and be recognized as one. That's really embarrassing to admit. But there's this universal need to categorize that most of us have, an unconscious set of assumptions that we carry. Our brains like to put people into little boxes. And there I was, suddenly in a different box. I had been this, and now I was that. And I didn't feel any different on the inside, except who I was attracted to had shifted. And that put me under the umbrella, or on the rainbow. LGBTQ suddenly applied to me. Kendra, Lisa, and I had a handful of conversations when the idea for this service came up. We knew we wanted to do something on gender diversity and non-binary thinking, but we weren't sure how to organize it and didn't know quite what we wanted the takeaway to be. As we were brainstorming, talking about where we were in all of this and how we had gotten there, Kendra kept lighting up. You know how Kendra is. Yes, that, and that, and that. Affirming us, helping us shape the message. But when it came time to draft an outline, I found myself baffled. What was the point I was trying to make? It seemed like what Kendra was underlining when she said that was my internal flailing. But maybe that was the point. Here I am, deeply in love with a trans woman, about to marry her. No longer an LGBTQ newbie. I know the terminology. I know there is no secret handshake. But also, I kept getting glimpses of this whole other level. Moments when my perspective suddenly shifts, and I feel right on the verge of understanding something different, something bigger. It's hard to put this into words, but I think that's what Kendra was responding to. Those moments when it became clear to me that my understanding was limited, that it wasn't big enough for the actual world. Here's an example. Lisa was born with a body that made people guess male, but she isn't a man. I was born with a body that made people guess female, and I see that guess as accurate, but I have all these traditionally male characteristics. Lisa jokes with me sometimes, asking, "Are you sure you're not trans?" And I am sure, although I can't say why, which leads to one of those moments. I can't explain why I'm a woman, I just am one. It's who I know myself to be. So when someone says they're a man, or a woman, or both, or neither, that's equally valid. Everyone is who they say they are. I believe that with every fiber of my being, that it isn't up to me to decide who someone else is. But my brain continues to hum along on well-worn paths, slotting people into categories. Our brains are filled with neural pathways. Those assumptions we make, it's because we're on one of those well-worn paths. I've been trying to catch myself, trying to notice when I've made an assumption that may or may not be true. It doesn't happen quite as often with gender because I've been sensitized to that, but it definitely happens in other areas, like with race. Lisa and I were having lunch with a friend from Portland. The friend has brown skin and wears the hijab. And after lunch, I asked Lisa conversationally, "So where's Samah from?" Thinking she was going to say Ghana or Tunisia or someplace equally exotic. But what she said was, "Ohio." I realized that I had a brain path that needed altering. I think most of us are in this place, trying to make a paradigm shift, broadening our ways of thinking, seeing other people, and being in the world. But it's hard. It's hard to keep up with new concepts and the terminology that goes with them. It's embarrassing to stumble, to say something that reflects old ways of thinking. But I think we have to be willing to take that chance, to challenge old ways of thinking, to forgive ourselves for the stumbles. Catching ourselves in a stumble is actually a good thing. As uncomfortable as it is, it means we've stepped away from one of those deeply familiar brain paths and are headed towards something new.
It amuses me that Dawn describes herself as someone who likes to get things right, as I would describe myself as someone who always likes to try to see things from the other side. It's a complementary difference, one of many in our relationship. And there are some lovely samenesses, too. One curious consequence of Dawn's certainty is that, in a way, she is more sure that I am a woman than I am. Not that I have any doubts about being transgender. Rather, it's because I really do think that the binary definitions of gender are insufficient. I sometimes talk about my 101 and my 201. My 101, when, for example, I'm testifying about a bill in a House committee and I want to keep things clear and simple, is that I am a trans woman. That means I was born with a male body but always had a female sense of self. My 201 is that I am a femme of center genderqueer person who has chosen to enact or perform womanhood in the world. It is also true that I see Dawn as more mixy in her gender than she does. It's one of the many things that I love about her. But actually, I see most people as more mixy in their gender than they see themselves. My personal theory of gender is that most human brains could have found adequate or even good ways to map onto the other gender if they had been born with the other body. But we got the bodies we got. And the binary is so pervasive, most of us just go along to get along. I would like to try to create closure for this service by mentioning a couple of games that I sometimes like to play. They are games that combine imagination and social experiment. The first one is called the Switcheroo game. We can play right now, shall we? So here's what you do. Here's how you play. Bring to mind another human. It can be somebody present or absent, whoever you like. If the person is a stranger, you'll be going on first impressions and those tricksy assumptions, but for the purposes of the game, that's fine. If you know them, a little or a lot, you can go on what you know about them, their personality, their characteristics, their conditions of life. And then the game is, keeping everything else you know about them the same, switch them in your imagination to another category in one of the big category sets, like race or gender. Let's try gender. Look at someone, or think of someone right now. Bring to mind what you guess or know about them, and then if you currently see or know this person as a woman, imagine them as a man, or vice versa. I'm going to let that happen for a moment. I don't know about you, but what I find when I play this game is I can always think of a plausible, realistic new person drawn from the memory that I have of humans I have met. This game teaches me that the full range of expressions of humanity is available in all combinations of the major categories. The other game I sometimes play is also super simple. It's the smile game. I play this game when I'm honestly feeling it, when I'm feeling warm and happy towards other humans in the world. And what I do is I show that warmth by smiling at the people that I meet. That's it. And I find that if/when people smile back, because sadly they don't always, their smile transforms the assumptions that my brain is making about them. The most telling example for me has to do with the one particular combination of major categories that I personally have the most trouble making assumptions about. So, I would like to invite you to join me right now in an imaginary walk down Water Street. A person is walking towards us. First group, white, male, in his 60s, work boots, jeans, bill cap, beefy build, close-cropped gray goatee, a resting face expression that reads as closed off, watchful, possibly a little angry. Can you see him? I don't know about you, but my assumption engine is spewing them out. Obviously conservative, likely a gun owner, maybe condescending to women, or even chauvinist, might be belligerent, possibly racist, homophobic. I am not proud of these assumptions, just being honest right now. And then I smile at him. And if he smiles back, my assumption engine hiccups and has to start again. Typical revised reads, which they don't have to be positive, but they are always more nuanced. Seems like he might be kind, or sad about something, or both. Seems polite. Was that a confrontational flash I saw in his eyes? He could possibly have a really oddball sense of humor, etc., etc. Before the smiles, a type. After the smiles, a human person. So what started out today as a conversation about gender has expanded, as things tend to do here at Fuse. It has grown into a conversation about our tendency to want to fit each other into neat categories, and how that can sometimes lead to squirmy or difficult moments. But it's also about how there is an opportunity in the squirm and the wrangle to do some valuable work. That chance is always there to keep learning, to push past the first levels of assumption and dig down towards a deeper form of perception and acceptance of each other, not as types or categories or punchlines, but as complex, unique, mixy humans, just like ourselves.
I invite you into a time of meditation, a time to settle in to who you are. They've been studying the brains of Buddhist monks when they meditate, and they've discovered that the way their brains work changes when they meditate, and their brains stay changed afterwards. So here we have a little moment to change our minds. So we'll just be still and just notice that you're breathing, and who you are today might settle into that gratefully. And who you are today might be restless. And that's all right. You can just be curious about what your mind and self is doing today. You won't sit for that long. You can settle or be curious. And remember that you are always whole. In this stillness, in this kindness toward ourselves and each other, let us make a moment to hear joys and sorrows, the passages that are shaping your lives in this moment. Come and stand with me down here in the center in the microphone so that we can hear what you need to say.
I'm Nancy Crawford, and I've been away for a while because my wonderful daughter, Elizabeth, had a son on April 26th, a very big boy at 8'11", for somebody who's 5 feet. It was not an easy process, trust me, but it all worked out beautifully in the end, and I get a chance to go up about once a week and spend a couple of days with them, helping out and holding William and doing fun things like that. I haven't graduated to diapers yet, but I... But
it's
if
like
anybody...
Bike.
Sorry?
It's like riding a bike.
So thank you so much.
One can just... Hi, I'm Maggie Kaliga, and for weeks now, my child has wanted me to come and give an update, and it started probably... Well, last fall, she legally changed her name from a definite girl name to a non-gender name. And she went from Lily Irene Kaliga, and I had asked her if this was what she really wanted, that she just added to the front of everything else. She is now Ren Lily Irene Kaliga. And she's been exploring her gender for some time now, and I don't know quite yet if she has found a comfortable place to be, but as described this morning, that the gender is continuous. It's not, it doesn't fit in a box. But she, she allows me to call her she because that's what I see and what I had explained to her. When I gave birth to a girl, and raised her mostly that way for 16 to 18 years. So she allows me that, and her father too, because it's difficult for me. But she knows in time that when she's settled, that I'll become settled. But she turned 21 this week, which was, boy, it just, the time went by so fast, and certainly the adventure of raising her. But the adventure continues because she told me the other day she's not moving out.
Oh. I'm John Keeter. My joiner, that was last Saturday at 12th. I was in Oxford, Mississippi, watching my grandson Shane earned his degree in geological engineering.
I'm Meg Shaney, and I am here to express my great gratitude to the staff at the Exeter Hospital, who beyond being proficient are incredibly caring and solicitous. I walked in there Tuesday morning and said, I have chest pain. And the woman said, and I started to fumble in my bag to get my, you know, ID and all that. Oh, she said, don't worry about that. We probably have that here. Why don't you have a seat? And I started to turn around, and this guy behind me with a wheelchair already practically hitting me. They are just astonishing. But I have discovered one thing about being in the hospital. If you are lonely and you want company, go to sleep. Somebody will show up with a needle or a blood pressure cup or whatever. It'll have a charm. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Janet Zarmack, and I also had a graduation in my family. My daughter, Kim, graduated with a degree in journalism from American University last weekend, which is why I wasn't here. But Friday, my joy was tempered by the news of the latest school shooting, and I realized that there are many parents who will not get the opportunity I did to see their child graduate from college because of gun violence.
Hello, I'm Miranda, and I'm not sure if this qualifies as a joy, but I'm going to share with you and ask for some help. My child, who is now go by Lam, many of you know him as Roger before, his name is Lam. But my joy is actually that he's right now in the middle of a gambling race, which is a 500-mile off-road race in a $500 car.
Oh.
Oh. So they make it yesterday to camp, over 300 miles, and the radiator broke. They limped the car to a parts store and got a new radiator, and they're now on their way out back. So if you have any car spirits, you can check with him. He is extremely proud of that, so I just want to share the joy with you that He is doing something that makes a mother worry, but he's totally having fun.
Jim and I would just like to thank you for being our spiritual home. 4 years ago today, we walked up the front steps, and it's been squirmy ever since. May we live long and squirm.
For sharing your hearts and your lives, thank you for sharing the full spectrum of this living that we share. One more practice for our day. This is the week that we give away our offering, that we keep finding those connections in the world that make our lives bigger. This morning, it is wonderful to welcome Jen Kennedy from the Blue Ocean Society, who will tell us about their work and how we can support it. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone. I want to thank you so much for having me. I'm Jen Kennedy, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Blue Ocean Society for Marine Conservation. Our mission is to protect marine life in the Gulf of Maine through research, education, and inspiring action. I met our co-founder, Diana Schulte, in 1996. We were both doing a whale research internship together in Gloucester. And after that, we were both working on local whale watch boats and collecting data on the whales off our coast. And we decided that we wanted to learn more about the biology and behavior of our local whales, and thought it'd be fun to just start a nonprofit organization, not realizing how serious it is and how long we would be in for it. Here we are about 17 years later. And in addition to studying the whales even more, we wanted to do education because there was a lot of people not really aware of the fascinating marine life that were right in our own backyards and how they could help protect them and all the human impacts that there are on the ocean. So we founded Blue Ocean Society in 2001. Our office has been in 2001. Thank you. Since we started in Portsmouth, and 5 years ago, we opened up the Blue Ocean Discovery Center in Hampton Beach as well, so we can do education right on the beach. Soon after, we founded the organization in 2001, and we started doing beach cleanups and a way to do hands-on action to help protect the marine life out there and get the community involved. And I know you all have adopted a beach many years ago, and I want to thank you for that. We really appreciate your support. I looked at our data real quick, and I believe since you've been involved in the program, the data I had was back to 2007. Members of Fuse and Phillips Exeter have removed over 4,000 pounds of litter just from Seabrook Beach. So that makes a huge difference. And our cleanup programs have grown quite a bit. Just to give you an idea, with your participation as well, we worked with volunteers to do over 200 cleanups last year. We removed over 8,000 pounds of litter from our beaches, and we are a pretty clean coastline here. We also count the items that we find, which, you know, if you've been to a beach cleanup, our volunteers picked up more than 84,000 items. And that information that we get is really important to us because that's what can help us develop solutions and do education. So we'll take the data that you gather at the cleanups at Seabrook Beach, volunteers gather along the coast, and then figure out where the problem areas are. Just as an example of that, last year we picked up over 2,000 straws on our beaches. And so we've been working to develop a Skip the Straw campaign, which encourages restaurants to only give out straws on demand. But the cool thing is that's also spread to some local schools who are trying to work on eliminating plastic straws from their cafeterias. And we do school programs around the seacoast and throughout New England, so we can use the data collected at the cleanups and on the whales to teach people kind of in real time what's going on in the Gulf of Maine and what they can do to help protect them. We've also been working with New Hampshire Sea Grant to do a study on microplastics, the tiny plastics on our local beaches, so that we can figure out, as these plastics are breaking up, where they're going and develop solutions for those as well. So I just really want to thank you so much for including us in your collection today. We're a really small nonprofit organization. We have 2 full-time staff members, 4 part-time staff. We do a lot with volunteers. We usually give an average number of about 1,000 volunteers per year. It's a nice round number, but it's certainly really, we couldn't do it without the volunteers, and every dollar that we raise really does make an impact right here on the seacoast because we are a small organization, so every little bit goes a long way. So the funds that we raise today will be used to support our cleanup programs and education initiatives around the seacoast, and hopefully keep our beaches cleaner so we can all enjoy them this summer, because it seems like summer is actually maybe finally on its way. And before I go, I just wanted to plug a couple upcoming events. If anybody likes to run or walk, we have a World Oceans Day celebration on June 2nd at Hampton Beach, and that includes our Run for the Ocean 5K, but we also have a beach cleanup right after that. And we are still looking for runners, walkers, and volunteers, so if anybody wants to participate, let me know or check out our website. And then I believe the day after that is your next beach cleanup at Seabrook Beach. So I want to thank Meg and David Weber for all their involvement over the years. You've really spearheaded this and done so much to make things easier on our end, because we just give you the supplies and you just go at it every month and do what needs to be done. So we really appreciate that. And if you haven't done a cleanup before, I hope you'll join them on June 3rd, because it's really enlightening and interesting, and can also be really fun too, even though you are picking up trash on the beach, but you're on the ocean. So again, thank you so much for having me. Check out our website at blueoceansociety.org, or come see me if you have any questions. Thanks again.
Our candles available up front, as always, if you wish to light one silently during this time. The morning offering for Blue Ocean Society values. This light with you to help find fresh perspectives on your own lives and on the lives of everyone you meet. Please join in our unison benediction. The words are printed in the order. Go, Lord.
Be true.
Be true.
Give thanks each day.
Thank you.